If you have a Bible, Ephesians chapter 6. I wrote in the top of my notes, which I don't always do, but George, it's a suggestion. George writes all my titles for the sermons. I typically don't title them, but what you don't control will control you. What you don't control will control you. And I'm here tonight to tell you that's every area and aspect of your life. What you open a door to in your life, what you give opportunity to in your life, what you give ground, what you give away ground to in your life, those things will control you. I know some people that are controlled by drugs. I know people that are controlled by alcohol. I know people that are controlled by pornography. I know people that are controlled by anger. I know people that are controlled by hurt. I know people that are controlled by grief. I know people that are controlled by sickness. I know people that are controlled by money and wealth. I know people that are controlled by a house. I know people that are controlled by a car. What I mean by that is what it costs, what it takes. Because how many of you know you just don't go and sign papers and it's yours? That's a note. And you've agreed that you will pay it back, right? You pay it back. That's an honorable responsibility if you've borrowed to pay it back. You honor God when you do that. But I know people that are slaves to automobiles or slaves to houses. I said to somebody not long ago that I know, none of you would even know this person. I said, don't become a slave to that thing. Live within your means. Because when you got to work 7 days a week to pay for it, it owns you. It controls you. You do not control it. Does that make sense to anybody? Ephesians chapter 6, beginning verse number 10. Finally, my brethren, speaking to the believer, to followers of Christ, be strong in the Lord. It's good to be physically strong. It's good to take care of ourselves. But it's even better to be strong in the Lord. It's good to be mentally strong. And how we become mentally strong is by being strong in the Lord. Be strong in the Lord and in the power, say power, that word is dunamis, that word translates so much bigger than what we can contain in that little tiny word, P-O-W-E-R. It's all power. It's not a limited power. It's not like a limited warranty. It's not like a limited power of attorney. A limited power of attorney means you have so much authority, so much access to that authority to do a thing. But dunamis, power, when he declares and subscribes to us that he's given us power. Now remember, because it's that same power. I still can't get away from that, Barbara. That same power. Did you? I did too. I woke up singing it this morning. That same power that raised Jesus from the dead, that dunamis. George, it went beyond natural realm. Death in and of itself couldn't hold the dunamis. It couldn't control it. Dunamis was beyond control of death itself. And to you and I, there's nothing more final than death. That's pretty final to us. To God, it wasn't such a big deal. Because he took a hunk of clay one day and he played with it and he made a man and he breathed in its nostrils. because it did not have any breath. But God breathed the breath of life into man. And man became a living being because God breathed into his nostrils the very breath of life. That's power. That's power. Go out and grab a hunk of dirt today and breathe on it and see what happens. Go out and get a hunk of dirt and play with it as much as you want. Breathe on it and see if it becomes a living soul. That's power. Power is when a blind man stands in front of you and you bend down and get a hunk of mud and you spit in it and you slap it on their eye and their eye opens up. Power is when you stand in a cemetery and you know your authority. I love this about Lazarus, Jerry. Jesus knew his authority. He knew his dunamis. He knew if he said, come out, every dead person would have come out. Because there's no limit to his power. The same power that rose Jesus from the dead dwells in you. That's resurrection power. And as the songwriter, whoever that is, that sings it, says, it's living on the inside. That means you're a powerhouse and you don't even know it. That power. Jesus, or God himself, breathed into the nostrils of man. Untamed, uncontrolled power. Let there be what was limited. Nothing. Nothing. There was nothing, and out of nothing, God said, let there be. That's power. Who do you know that can do that? Can your employer do that? Can the mortgage company that has your mortgage, can they do that? Can the bank that has your car loan, can they do that? Does the person who's pulling the strings on you, and you're just like a... That's how most people live life through life. They're like a marionette puppet. Somebody's pulling the strings, and they're doing... I'm doing what I do because... Not because of the power that dwells in me. Not because of the power and authority. And Jesus said, I have given you power. Now, the one that says, let there be, says, I'm giving you the power to speak to a thing that isn't as if it was. There was no light. God said, let there be light. Boy, if this gets in us, we'll transform people's lives. We'll transform people's homes. We'll transform businesses and corporations and my word, if we could understand the authority that God has given to us and know how to move and work and exercise in that authority, Jesus walks in that cemetery and says, Lazarus, because he understood the dunamis. He understood, if I just unleash it, then everybody's coming up out of there. Lazarus, come forth. That's power. That's power. When he said to a man, if you can believe, then all things are possible. I've just given you power. And it's in your ability to believe. Faith without works is, unless we apply the power. Unless we apply the power. Remember when I was a youth pastor, some of you will remember this because you're old enough and probably were around my age at that time or in youth groups at that time or in church anyway. How many remember the power teams? Anybody here remember the power teams that would go around to churches? These guys would take phone books and rip them in half. They would take hot water bottles, blow them up to the... It's like he had this hot water bottle. He blew that thing up. It exploded, and his whole face was all red from that thing smacking him in the side of the face with it. They'd take bars and put them around their neck, and they'd bend steel bars, and they'd do all kind of stuff to show the power of God. And I remember Gary sitting there thinking, you have no clue. You have no clue. You are just like a big muscle-bound dude that can tear paper. But God, the power God has, he could rent this building in half tonight and then put it back together if he wanted. That's power. And it wouldn't take 3 months either. And it wouldn't take power tools and wood from Lowe's. He could just say, be back together, and there it would be. Because he has power. He is power. And he says that power is available to each and every one of us. So, Christians, followers, be strong. Be strong in what you know. Be strong in what you believe. Don't be tossed by every wind of doctrine. Don't be startled by every little hiccup along the road or the pathway of life. Don't give up so easily. Be strong. Be courageous. How can we be strong and how we be courageous? Because the Spirit lives in us. We just have to trust it. We just have to believe it. How many here has ever done something you didn't think you could do, but somebody convinced you to try it, and when you tried it, you did it? Anybody? I have. There have been some things in my life. When we were kids and we were teenagers, we literally grew up in the playgrounds. Spent all day at the playground. All evening, we'd go home for lunch, go back to the playground. Go home for dinner, go back to the playground. When the street lights came on, where did we go? Home. Yeah. And so we were at the playground all the time. And I'm telling you, there were probably 50, 60 kids at any given time at our playground every day. And especially late after dinner, because we'd be running full court games and have, you know, 5 or 6 or 8 teams. And you'd have to sit and wait, and winners stayed on and losers, you know, we just rotate and play and play and play. But we would play, you know, during the day when there weren't as many there. We'd play games like horse, or, you know, where you shoot the ball and somebody has to do the same shot you would do and things like that. And we would do sometimes because you wanted to do something that you didn't think the other person could do. There was a wall. Basketball hoop was about where that TV is, and there was a wall that came just a foot behind where that basketball hoop was. And so many of us who were crazy got the idea that we could put a lot of people out of the game by fear. Because if we would do something off the wall, literally, off the wall, there would be someone just say, I'm out. I ain't doing that. That's crazy. And sometimes some people got hurt going off the wall. And sometimes we'd have to get on the bank and run down the wall. Run down the bank and leap off the wall to try to dunk the ball or do whatever. And I was playing this one day, this kid, and he used to beat me all the time. I was determined he wasn't going to beat me. And I wanted to come up with something good. But this other kid, he could do something that I'd never seen anybody on that playground do. He would come down that bank, and he would jump off, and he would put the ball between his legs and then dunk it. He'd say, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Well, the first time I tried, Gary, I hit that ball on the side of the rim, and down I went on that court. But when nobody was around, at times nobody was around, I would practice that and practice it and practice it. Nobody knew I could do it. But I had it down to where I was doing it almost every time. So I'm playing horse against that kid that night. And I jumped off that wall, and he said, I'm out. I ain't doing it. I'm not doing it. He realized you could get hurt Which you could. And it was dumb, and I wouldn't do it now. I wouldn't even think about doing it now. I wouldn't even jump off the wall now. Let alone, you know. But we used to do things like that. But somebody told me, you can do it. They convinced me that I could do it, and I did, and I saw that I could. So a lot of people in life that just don't do things because they're afraid they can't, or fear creeps in, or... But when it comes to living for God, and when it comes to trusting God to provide for us in this life, and trusting God to find favor in His sight, and trusting God to use us in His kingdom, He says to us, be strong and hold on. But the strength is not in and of ourselves. The strength is His strength. Because He declares to us in His word, when we are weak, He is strong. I was always a small kid, you know. I was never big. I never lifted weights. I never did any of that stuff. And we had a local pool, much, you know, kind of like the Dairy Pool, but it's way bigger than that one. But it was called the Oakford Park Swimming Pool. Anybody ever heard of it? The Oakford Park Swimming Pool. And we used to go there and hang out all the time. We'd get season passes and go down there because that's where all the girls were. So that's where we'd go, because that's where all the girls were, so we'd go hang out at the pool. But the big weightlifter guys would always come down. And they'd, I'll never forget, they'd get on the high dive. But before they get on the high dive, they'd go in the changing room, and they'd grease all up. And they'd go out on that diving board. You know, and they'd be flexing their leg muscles and all that stuff, and just big, hulking men. I mean, some of these guys were massive. They were strong. And I'll never forget, this kid is about 4 years older than me. He went to school with my brother. And a few years later, after he graduated school, I saw him. And he didn't look anything like he did in school. And I said to him, "Hey, how you doing?" He's like, "Oh, I'm not so good these days." And I said, "What happened?" He said, "Man, I slipped a disc in my back." He says, "It takes me an hour to get out of bed." He said, "It takes me an hour to get out of bed." He said, "I got to roll out of bed onto the floor. I crawl to the bathroom. I pull myself up on the toilet, grab a hold of the sink. I pull myself up." He said, "I live most every day in extreme pain and blah, blah, blah." Physically, at one point, he was strong, very strong. His strength was taken away from him. Years later, I saw him again, and he looked really, really, really good. Came to find out, he found the Lord. He's a Christian. His back has been restored to him. But he said to someone, he didn't tell it to me, but he said to someone, "I realized my strength was not in the physical, but it was in God." Although God wanted me to be strong physically, and he said, you know, that was all good. He said, but I took it out of perspective, and everything was just about the physical, and nothing was about the spiritual. And that can be our job, it can be our relationships, it could be any area aspect. Like I said, it can be a car, it can be a house, it can be a lot of things. It can be a savings account. I know some people that will give more to their savings account than they ever consider giving to the kingdom. Well, what owns them? Their savings account owns them. You know, they become slaves to that thing. And I'm not against saving, and I'm not against being strong. But I'm talking to you tonight about putting things in perspective and knowing where the real strength and the real power comes from. It's God. Then the apostle goes on to tell us this, which is an action. It's something on our part. He's telling us to be strong in the Lord and the power of His might, but we're to put on the whole armor of God. We're to put something on that you may be able to stand against the wiles, the cunning, the craftiness of the devil. So he says to us, you have to be able to put this on. If you do not put this on, you will not be able to stand. There's a lot of people in life that have not stood. There are people today that are not standing because they've not put on the armor of God. They've tried to do things on their own. They've tried to live their own way. They've tried to figure things out themselves. They've not done it God's way. And they find they're unable to stand, and they're miserable, and they're lonely, and they're unhappy. They're agitated all the time. Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. How many of you know there's a spiritual realm all around us? There's a spirit realm going all around us. Most have never seen it with their physical eyes. There are some whose eyes have been opened, and they've seen things. A few times in my life, God allowed me to see beyond the veil of some things in the spiritual realm. And scared the living daylights out of me. He's had to tell me, don't be afraid. Because I've seen things that I would never want to see again. I was listening to an interview this afternoon that for the first time that we have knowledge of this happening, in our last presidential election, that witches and warlocks all over the world, and especially in the United States of America, came together the week after the election to do everything they could in the spiritual realm to affect what was going to happen. Now, most in the average person, the average Christian, the average person sitting in a church tonight is like, well, I have no clue about that stuff. Well, you should. Because there's a real devil. His name is Beelzebub, Lucifer, the great dragon. And he's a deceiver. He's a thief. Anybody that steals is not of God. They're a thief. He's a thief. That's who the father is. Anyone that lies, God does not lie. The Bible's specific on it. God does not lie. He's not a man. If we lie, who is the father of lies? Who's the Bible said is the father of lies? Satan. Beelzebub, Lucifer. The deceiver. The one who really doesn't have authority but masquerades around as if he does. He's kind of like the bully who bullies and bullies and bullies till somebody stands up to him, and then you find out the bully wasn't so tough after all. Anybody ever know someone like that? A bully, a bully, a bully, a bully, and then somebody got the nerve to stand up to the bully and found out the bully wasn't the bully anymore. He just acted tough. That's the way the enemy is. He masquerades. He appears. He comes as, but he's not. That's what Scripture teaches us. But we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. In other words, our wars are not against each other. Our battles, our fights, our arguments are not against each other, although we may think they're against each other, but they're not. They're against the one who wants us to war against each other. These battles are really with principalities and against powers, against the rulers, darkness, against the spiritual wickedness in high places. And boy, there is spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day. Wherefore, take unto you the whole. In other words, we can't pick and choose what parts we're going to wear. Therefore, take the whole armor. Because how many of you know there's a piece of the armor missing? Where do you think somebody that's going to attack you is going to attack you? where you're vulnerable. Took karate when I was little for a little while. Took a little bit of boxing lessons when I was little because I had to learn to defend myself very early against my brothers. But I wasn't dumb. I'd learn real quick. I'm a quick observer. I really am. I wasn't in very many fights in my life, but the ones I was in, man, I was like a spider monkey. I'd jump all over that person. Just overwhelm them. But Barbara, I would watch a kid. And you know you get in a fight on the playground when you're a kid? Well, I loved it when a kid held his hands down like this. Because when a kid held his hands down like that, I knew right where I was going. And it wasn't for his belly. Yeah, I know I'm not real proud of it now, but I fought when I was on the playground, Jerry. Believe it or not. I talk my way out of a fight now. I don't want to fight anybody now. But you know how when you're dumb and, you know, you're a kid. Jake, you know what I'm talking about. You ever been in a fight? That's a silly question to ask, huh? But man, Gary, the kid held his hands down. You loved that. Because he wasn't protecting up here. You know, when you're a little kid, first one to draw blood, usually the fight's over because the other person gets really scared once the blood shows. I went right for the nose, man. Go ahead, drop that hand. And as soon as they'd bring that hand down, man, pop! And then I wouldn't stop. It was not one pop. As soon as that head twilled, pop! Bam! 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 On the ground. Bam! 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 Because I knew I wasn't big, and if he got back up, he'd kill me. But I looked for the vulnerable spot, Gary. That's the way the enemy is. He'll watch, and if you don't have armor in the right place, he'll get you. You don't have that one arm guarding your rib. He's going to get you. You're not protecting your face. Depending on which hand he is, got to know what dominant hand he is. You can't figure that out. You're in trouble right off the bat. The enemy, he watches for where we're weak. And then he comes at that. You know why he attacks us in our minds so much? Because that's where we're weak. That's where we're vulnerable. Because we say things like, oh, I'm never going to get over this. Oh, I'm never going to get victory. This is never going to happen. We speak all these defeatist things out of our mouths. How many of you know this? Do you know this? Do you know that the enemy does not know your thought realm? He does not know what you're thinking. Only God does. But when it exits your mouth and it comes into the realm of flesh, then the enemy grabs hold of it. And he uses it. He uses our own words against us. Over the years, I've become very careful what I'll say about something. Won't even acknowledge it. I've had some sicknesses that I've stood behind that pulpit and preached was something that most people would have never stood there. They'd been in the hospital. Actually, not all that long ago, I preached God would break your chains. And I had something afflicting my body that nobody knew about. And I wouldn't dignify it, Barbara, to give it a name. I knew what it was, but I wouldn't speak it. We were getting ready for bed one night. My wife said, is that? I said, shh. Don't you say it. Don't let it out. Yeah, that's what it is. I would not dignify it. I would not give it a name. It never prospered. It never grew. And it never gave me an ounce of discomfort or pain. I would not dignify it. I would not honor it. I would not glorify it. See, sometimes we glorify infirmities in our bodies. We own them. My this, my that. It wasn't mine. That thing comes from the pit of hell. It's from the enemy. I don't own it, and I don't receive it. Therefore, I will not speak of it. Oh, that's just foolish. You should have. Well, I'll tell you how it worked out for me. It went away, and it never affected me physically. George, I wasn't going to own it. Well, that's my this, that's my that. No, it's not yours. If it's not from God, don't own it. Don't claim it. Don't claim it. Don't claim it. Don't accept it. Stand on the word of God. Be healed. Be delivered. Be set free. He's given you dunamis. We leave ourselves vulnerable with our words, with our actions, with our process of dealing with things. Put on the whole armor that you may be able to withstand the evil day. Having done all to do to stand, stand. Then stand. When you've done everything that you can do, then just stand. And put your confidence and your trust in God. Quote His word, speak His word, believe His word, rely on His word. What's the alternative? The alternative is literally to mistrust Him at His word. Because if He says something, is He not faithful? Come on. Is He not faithful to complete what He has begun? If He's begun a restoration process in you, will He not complete it? Oh, may not happen in a day, may not happen in a few days, but is He not faithful to complete it? Yes, He is. That's what the Word of God says. So I'm going to trust the Word. I'm going to believe what God says above all other feelings, thoughts, emotions, whatever. Because He breaks chains. And when I stood and believed that He would break your chain in the middle of my own chain, not only did He break some of your chains, but He broke my chain too. Because I didn't dignify my chain. Because the whole thing was, He was just trying to stop me. Because He knew what God put in me. He knew the authority God was given me to stand and break chains with you. And the enemy wanted to deceive and hinder me. I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't have it. Would not stand for it. Because greater is He. I don't know what God some people serve. I really don't. Rhonda, some people serve this weak, whimsical God. Bible says, greater is this God who lives in me than the Beelzebub who's in the world. We either believe that or we don't. We're just fooling ourselves if we don't to act like we do. Stand therefore, having your loins girded with truth, and having the breastplate of righteousness. There's so much in all of this, but I have to get to the one spot that I need to get to of what I'm talking to you about tonight. The breastplate of righteousness, your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Above all, the shield of above all, taking the shield of faith. Because how many of you know without faith it's impossible? It's impossible. You cannot please God without faith. He's not saying you need a boatload of it. He just says you have to have faith. He said if you have the faith of a mustard seed, and that's not much. Most people could muster up that, no pun intended. Shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench all fiery darts of the wicked. Now here it is. I said everything I said tonight to just get right to this point. And take the helmet. Say helmet. Take the helmet of salvation. And the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. The helmet. The helmet of salvation. How many of you know if you were putting on a suit of armor tonight, what do you think the last thing that you would put on would be? The helmet. The helmet would be the last thing you would put on. What is probably the most important thing? The helmet. Because if your head is struck, you do not have the ability to take care of the rest of the body. If you can't think right, you can't think straight. Verse 17 instructs us, put on the whole armor, but take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. It's the final act, if you will, of preparation. The final act of readying yourself for combat. Survival at its best. Protecting the brain, which how many of you know is literally the command center for the rest of the body. If this up here is damaged, the rest of the armor would be of very little use. That word helmet, about a week ago, stuck in my mind, stuck there. Because I had read something about a helmet. And I went and I looked up that word helmet. But that word helmet, the helmet of salvation, literally means deliverance. The helmet of deliverance. When you receive salvation, what have you been? You have been delivered. You have been delivered. Listen, God knew that in this life where he said you're going to have troubles and difficulties, he knew. There's so much I want to say to you, but time goes by so fast. He knew we would struggle, but he knew one of the biggest vulnerabilities of our life would be in a very tiny space between our ears. And he knew within the circumference of our head, our brain, our mind, would face battles, struggles. He knew in our mind we would become weary. And the struggles that we would face, the lies, the deceptions, the demonic attacks, are targeted and rooted at our mind to get us to mistrust God, to get our thoughts focused in the wrong direction. Because if our thoughts are focused in the wrong direction, we will create and develop unhealthy patterns, unproductive thought patterns. And how many of you know there are a lot of people in this world have a lot of unhealthy thought patterns? I knew somebody years ago that had done something in their life, and they saw somebody that brought back a memory, and they went to that person and said, and they brought something up that happened years and years and years ago, and the person said, honestly, I didn't even remember that. I didn't even remember that happened. But that person was so afraid in their own mind, Jim, that something that happened 20 years ago, that person was going to hold it against them. That person, I didn't even remember that until you brought it back up. And you know the crazy thing is? Chances are that man went home that night and started thinking about what happened 20 years ago that guy brought back up. Because that person obviously has truly not experienced deliverance in the fact that whom the Son sets free, I've known people say, well, I can't go there, I can't go around those, I can't, because people would know. Whom the Son sets free is free.